This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Guy Raz. Week one of the Copenhagen Climate Conference has come to a close, and next week is make-it-or-break-it time for some kind of global climate agreement. We begin the hour with a closer look at the stakes in Copenhagen, and later we'll find out what caused a mysterious decade of global cooling 2 centuries ago. Now, even though Copenhagen won't produce a binding treaty, economist Nicholas Stern, who's headed to the meeting tomorrow, hopes to get one simple message across. The price of doing nothing in the fight to stop climate change is higher, much higher, than the cost of containing it now. Stern is the former chief economist at the World Bank, and he's laid out a blueprint for action, immediate action, in his book, The Global Deal. Nicholas Stern is at his home in West Sussex in the UK. Welcome to the program.
It's very nice to talk to you, Guy.
Now, a key argument of opponents of new measures to curb emissions is the cost, that it'll cost too much money for a country like the U.S. to force its industries to cut back on emissions. You obviously disagree.
Yes, I do. There are two costs you have to look at, the costs of acting strongly and the costs of doing very little. The cost of doing very little, going on as we are with a heavily hydrocarbon-dependent world, would lead us to roughly a 50-50 chance, sometime the end of this century, early next, of a 5 degree centigrade, 9 degree Fahrenheit increase in temperature relative to pre-industrial times. Now, the planet has not been there for 30 million years. So that would lead us into uncharted territory. Some areas would be underwater. Much of southern Europe, for example, would look like the Sahara Desert. You would see people moving in the hundreds of millions. And that would involve severe extended global conflict.
Now, in your book, you are calling on developed countries like the United States to reduce their emissions by 20 to 40% by the year 2020. Now, there is a draft agreement similar to this circulating in Copenhagen now. But how realistic is it? I mean, 40% is dramatic.
I think the world would have to understand that it'll take the United States a little bit longer to make emissions reductions of that magnitude. But I think the United States can do it. I think if you look at the way in which technology has started to move forward in the United States, many parts of the United States, many firms, many cities have been real leaders on this. So I think we have the ability to move quickly in the rich world and in the poor world.
Nicholas Stern, back in 2005, then British Prime Minister Tony Blair asked you to put together an analysis for what climate change will mean for the global economy. Right now, it seems like the only incentives for politicians to make changes are fear of what climate change might bring. So how do you sort of lay out a plan that would put together incentives that would spur the kinds of changes you're calling for?
Well, we start off by recognizing two things, that to do very little is extremely dangerous and costly. To do very little is the most costly policy. High carbon growth will kill itself. First, on very high prices of hydrocarbons, and secondly, on the very hostile physical environment it would create. So that's the first part. But the second part is to recognize the positive side of this kind of technological change. It would set off a really dynamic process of transition, of discovery, where the United States would be in the lead, and it will be more energy secure. It'll be cleaner, quieter, safer, and more biodiverse. So I think we have to recognize the enormous attraction of one route, the low-carbon route, and the devastating consequences of the other route, the high-carbon route.
Well, how much time do you estimate we have?
We really have to turn this round within a decade. The emissions in the world, if we're to have any chance of really cutting back on these risks, will have to peak before 2020. But I think that if you look at the intentions that the countries of the world have expressed, and they've been remarkable in these last weeks and months as we've moved towards Copenhagen, you've had Japan with the new prime minister saying, we will cut back by 25% on our emissions 1990 to 2020. You've had China setting its targets, India setting its targets, Brazil and Indonesia, strong targets for cutting deforestation, which is a very important source of emissions. And you've had progress in the United States with the Waxman-Markey bill moving through the House. Then you've had Lisa Jackson's announcement that the EPA will play it's part two. If you add all these up around the world, we're not so very far away from an agreement which could see emissions peaking before 2020 as a world and going on down from there.
I mean, given that the Copenhagen meeting won't produce a binding treaty, what are you hoping to see come out of it?
We need two things fundamentally. We need agreements on these targets at the level of Prime Minister and President. The second thing is we have to find support from the developing world, particularly for Africa and vulnerable countries, particularly for stopping deforestation, particularly for promoting new technology. That financial support is required to help the developing world make their changes.
Nicholas Stern is the chair of the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change at the London School of Economics. He wrote the book, The Global Deal. Nicholas Stern, thanks for joining us, and safe travels to Copenhagen.
Thank you very much, Guy.